Thank you, Sydney and Sienna. It's a gift. We appreciate it. We're grateful for you. Hey, I want to continue a conversation we started really on Easter morning about this idea of liminal spaces. But before I get too far, I want to just ask for a little bit of help. I would love to have two people read the scripture for this morning, which is right there, Exodus 16, verses 1 to 3, and then 6 to 8. So if anyone would be willing to read that, I need one person to read verses 1, 2, and 3, and one person to read verses 6, 7, and 8. If you'd be willing to do that, you can just throw your name in the chat window, and then we'll do that here in a couple of minutes. So feel free to go ahead and do that. I'd be grateful. All right, so we're talking about liminal spaces. And you know, I came across a quote this week from Richard Rohr, who writes about liminal spaces with some regularity. And he says, a liminal space is a space in which you have left the tried and true, but have yet been able to replace it with anything else. I think about how accurately that describes our current reality. What was tried and true, right? Prior to March, whatever date that was in the middle of the month when things kind of drastically changed, we had our routines. We knew how to grocery shop. Going out for dinner if we wanted to was simple. But that tried and true way of life is no more. And while many of those things, you know, may return, no one knows when or what all of this is going to look like. We're in this in between. And I shared this image last week. You know, we've let go, or we've been made to let go of one reality, and we're hanging in between these two spaces, what was and what will be. And you know, the Bible is full of stories of individual people and entire communities who journey through liminal spaces, who find themselves in between what was and what will be. And so, of course, liminal spaces are transitional spaces, pardon me, and they're also transformational spaces. They're both. And here's one reason why liminal spaces are potentially transformational spaces. Because in a liminal space, one of the things that happens is that these core questions about life and about who we are, these core questions, I think that are always there, but quite often in the busyness of a normal life, these questions kind of get covered over, they get buried underneath all that usually is. But in a liminal space, so much of what was has been stripped away, and so these questions have the chance to kind of rise to the surface. They were always there, but we maybe didn't have to pay attention to them. But now in this liminal space, they're there and they're much harder to ignore. You still can ignore them, but they're harder to ignore. And so last week we talked about this really foundational question of, am I safe? Right? That gets raised for the Israelites. This week, I want to talk about a couple of other questions. They are, who's to blame? And what is there for me to learn? Who's to blame and what is there for me to learn? All right, so I need a couple readers. And in the chat window, I see one reader. It's my daughter, which is wonderful. But I need one more. And so anyone else willing to read? Ruby, you're going to read verses 1, 2, and 3. Doesn't matter to me what translation it is. You can read from really anyone you want. And I'm wondering if there's anybody else who would be willing to read 6, 7, and 8. Elliot, thanks so much. So
Teresa, if you would be able to maybe hopefully unmute Bethany and then Sarah, I think those are the two lines those folks are on. And Ruby, you can get us started.
Sure. The whole community of Israel set out from Elim and journeyed into the wilderness of Sin between Elim and Mount Sinai. They arrived there on the 15th day of the second month, 1 month after leaving the land of Egypt. There, too, the whole community of Israel complained about Moses and Aaron. If only the Lord had killed us back in Egypt, they moaned. There we sat around pots filled with meat and ate all the bread we wanted. But now you've brought us into the wilderness to starve us all to death.
So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, in the evening you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt. And in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us? Moses also said, you will know that it was the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want in the morning, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we? You're not grumbling against us, but against the Lord.
Thanks, Elliot. Thanks, Ruby. Appreciate it. All right, so the people of Israel are in a liminal space. And in the midst of their unease and their discomfort, they point the finger at Moses and Aaron. How could you do this to us, they say? How could you lead us so poorly? You know, in other words, what they're doing in verse 3 here is assigning blame. And I suppose we probably shouldn't be surprised to find the people of Israel doing this, because I think often, you know, in liminal spaces, we default to blame. And this makes sense. You know, liminal spaces are spaces we find ourselves in because something has dramatically changed. And that change is quite often difficult and involves disruption and loss, right? That's what we've been talking about here. And it's where we find ourselves today. We're in a space of disruption, of loss, of significant change. And I came across a video this week of Brené Brown, and she talks about blame in the context of vulnerability. And she says this: when something bad happens, the first thing we want to know is, whose fault is it? Why do we want to do that? Because it gives us some semblance of control. You know, in Exodus 16, the Israelites feel lost. Understandably so. You know, for them and perhaps for us, the world felt out of control. And in the midst of that uncertainty and pain, they looked for someone that they could blame. Whose fault is it? And then they found their answer. The whole community of Israel complained about Moses and Aaron. The word for complain here means to spend the night or to lodge. In other words, they focused all of their energy and attention. They just parked it, set up camp on Moses and Aaron and said, you're it. All of our thoughts, all of our blame, all of our hurt, all of our sense of being lost and confused, it's all your fault. And then to me it's funny what then happens in verse 7. You know, in the morning, Moses says to the people, in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your complaints. Boy, that's the Lord's goodness in the midst of all of this, which are against him, not against us. What have we done that you should complain about us? You know, first the people blame Moses and Aaron.
you've done this to us. And then Moses and Aaron turn and say, whoa, Aaron and I didn't do this. We're not to blame. Your beef is with God. It's this cycle of blame starting to build, which feels all too familiar to me. And maybe it does to you too. Because in liminal spaces, we quickly default to blame. You know, I'm curious, as you think about your life in general or about our time here in this pandemic in particular, I wonder, have you found yourself ever perhaps casting blame? And if so, you know, on whom have you cast it? Right, I thought it might be interesting to just have a little question out there that we can respond to in the chat window. And you can speak hypothetically, you know, about yourself, or you can speak about, you know, what human beings do in general. And you can think about this time in the pandemic, or you can think about life in general. Who do we blame in life? Who are some of our scapegoats, do you think? Again, right now or in general? Yeah, those in leadership. That's, I think, spot on. Government, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Very good. Who else do we blame? Our spouse, sure enough, with regularity in all likelihood. Mm-hmm. Sure. WHO, anyone who's over us, again, that idea of people in leadership. Yeah, that's good, Kevin. Those people. Yep. Corporations catch the heat. Media catches the heat. For sure. Mm-hmm. Those are great. So that feels fairly pandemic specific, as does that one, although God could be someone that we blame really at any moment in our lives, right? Mm-hmm. Well, not surprisingly, you all are a very astute people. And I think those are some of the very things that are at play right now. Some of the things that are easy to blame. I've been just especially mindful of how much I have been blaming politicians. And many of you have named that, you know, assigning all of my anger and confusion on them. But I also think of a different example that happened during these last 6 weeks, although it's not, well, kind of, you know, COVID-19 pandemic related. We had a leaky kitchen faucet that needed to be repaired. And our local hardware store here in the neighborhood is not letting people go into the store. So what you have to do is you either can call ahead and tell them what you need. They'll gather it and have it ready for you when you arrive. Or you can just show up and stand outside the store and tell them what you need, and they'll go inside and get it. And so I thought I knew what I needed. I took some pictures and I called the hardware store, talking to the person, sent him my photos, chat, figured out, okay, he said, I know what you need. Come by in 10, 15 minutes, I'll have it ready for you. So I went by, grabbed it, came back home, started putting this back together. And as I'm under the sink, crammed, I mean, have you been under the sink? It's not a great place to be. You know, crammed under there, I'm wet, my back is getting, you know, pinched against the corner of the cabinet. But I think I'm getting near the end, and I'm up there trying to reach to get that faucet connected when I realize I don't have what I need. And right at that moment, a piece of the hardware metal, mind you, falls, hits me on the head. I say something, you know, I don't remember what it was, of course. And I immediately, this is an instantaneous movement. I blame the hardware store person, right? That's what comes out of my mouth. And so I get back in the car, gather all the parts, get back in the car, go to the store. Of course, I'm not in my happy place when I start this conversation with this person, and come to find out after a few minutes of his explanation to me,
I had the right parts the whole time. I just didn't see it. You know, I wasn't even a possibility that I might have some responsibility, that I might be the one who is making a mistake. No, the blame was squarely elsewhere. You know, and I just think this is how instinctual or how reflexive blame can be in our lives. It's just something we do without thinking. Here's the thing, though. Blame deflects attention away from us, which is ultimately quite unhelpful. It does not really move us forward, but it sure seems appealing. And so that's probably one of the reasons why we do it. It deflects attention away from us. And it tries, I think, to put us in a position of power, right? And we see this in Exodus 16. The people are living a really hard life. There's no reason to sugarcoat it. They're in a foreign and harsh land. They have no food. And they're in that space with an incredibly uncertain future. They blame Moses and Aaron. And Moses then in turn says, hey, don't blame me, blame God. That's who you have your problem with. And everyone starts pointing the finger at everyone else. Why do we do this? Because it's just easier, or it feels easier, more comfortable, less vulnerable to point the finger over there instead of looking in here. If I blame the hardware store person, then I don't have to consider if I've made a mistake. If the politician is to blame, then I don't have to be vulnerable and think about my actions or how I'm feeling. I can just put all of the attention on them. See, blame allows me to sidestep any responsibility, to look inward. And again, it tries to put me in a position of power. Because if Moses and Aaron are at fault, then that means that I'm not. And if I'm not at fault, then that means that I'm right, which means I'm better, which gives me some sense of power or control. And so, you know, I understand why we would scrap and scrape for control when we are in a liminal space. That makes sense to me why we would do that. But it does nothing to move us forward. Now, the really astute, and you all are astute, so it's probably all of you are saying to yourself, well, hold on. Sometimes the hardware store person does make a mistake. Shouldn't they be held accountable? Shouldn't we point that out? Sometimes the politician does lead poorly. Shouldn't they be held accountable for that? And I would say yes. Absolutely. We should hold them accountable. But accountability is not the same as blame. Accountability actually involves vulnerability. It involves us saying to someone, you've hurt me, or you've made a mistake and it's impacted me in this way. Right? Blame involves no vulnerability. It does nothing to draw us closer to anyone else or to ourselves. Blame only increases the distance between us. And so, as gratifying as blame may feel, when I blame, and you can fill in the blank, for who I am or for how I'm showing up in the world, again, it does nothing to move us forward. And so what do we do? Well, we may be tempted to simply say, okay, now that I know that blame is not helpful, thanks to Chris's masterful teaching, I'm just not going to do it anymore, right? I'm just not going to, got it, bad, I won't do it anymore. Well, come on, that's not realistic, right? We're probably going to blame somebody here pretty soon. It's a default pattern that most of us have, I believe, I would imagine. And default patterns don't change overnight. So when it happens, When you find yourself blaming someone else, let me invite you into two postures. I want to invite you to look in and to lean in. To look in and be curious, and to lean in to a deeper, truer power. You see, friends, if blame attempts to deflect attention away from us, then the alternative would be, right, to look inward and to ask ourselves, what's going on here? And why am I showing up this way in the world? And if blame tries to put us in a position of power and control, then the alternative, it seems, would be to lean into a power that is greater and truer and deeper than any power we can fabricate on our own. And I think this is what Israel is being asked to do in Exodus 16, and really in every chapter for the rest of the book. They spend 40 years in a liminal space. And that 40 years is really all about Israel trying to discern and discover their identity, the identity that God is giving to them. They were slaves. Now they're being invited to be the people of God. They were in bondage. Now they are free to be the light of the world. But they're in between these two things, and they don't quite know how to go from one to the other. They're learning this. They're trying to discover this. God is calling them to it. And friends, if that isn't an inward journey, a journey that requires looking at yourself and at ourselves, I'm not sure what is. And then, of course, very clearly we see that it's also a journey in which they have to lean into the one who is, again, truer, greater, more faithful, more kind, more powerful than they ever can be on their own. Israel has to look in, and they have to lean in. And maybe we do too. Let me close with a couple of examples, just maybe to try and put some flesh on this a little bit. You know, in these last 6 weeks, let's imagine that at times I've been irritable. I mean, hypothetically, right? Of course, just for illustrative purposes. Let's imagine I've been irritable from time to time. And let's just say that I've been blaming it by and large on COVID-19. Anybody else found this pandemic to be a really convenient scapegoat? And I want to be clear, I've been saying this for a number of weeks now. Hey, listen, we have got to, all of us have got to acknowledge what we're feeling, where we are at in the midst of this disorientation. Like we have to be honest about that. But I'm doing something different than that. I'm blaming how I am showing up in the world on something else. Like when I'm irritable or my fuse is short, I will often essentially say, hey, don't look over here, look over there. It's because of that pandemic. If there wasn't a pandemic, I am certain I would be patient and kind. And so when I've been irritable, hypothetically, and I can't do this in the moment all the time. I usually have to do this, unfortunately, after the fact. Occasionally, I can do this in the moment. It's usually afterwards, though, after I've said something or done something out of that irritability that is hurtful or harmful, that I am reflective and I'm trying to think, why am I showing up like this? Right? I do my best to say to God, God, help me see who I am and how I'm showing up. Give me insight to whatever may be behind that. Give me understanding. Give me humility. Give me courage. Help me, instead of pointing the finger over there, help me to look inward with a compassionate curiosity. And then help me to change, if change is needed. I'm trying to look in and to lean in. And when we do this, this is when liminal spaces become transformative spaces. If all we're ever doing is pointing the finger, though, the opportunity, the potential for change and transformation is negated. We have to be willing to do the courageous and compassionate work of looking inward and asking God to help us with that. So that's one example. That's an everyday example. Here's something a little different, but it's also come out of this pandemic for me. You know, for the last couple of weeks, I've been reading about how the virus, which was dubbed as the great equalizer, is actually impacting people of color disproportionately. And my gut reaction when I first heard about that, and I didn't even have to think about it, it was just instinctive and knee-jerk reflexive, was to blame. And I'm not proud to say to you, but I think we've got to name this stuff when we can. I'm not proud to say to you that the blame that I was placing was on people of color. When I first heard about the disproportionality of it, I asked myself, I wonder what people of color are doing to be getting sicker more often. I wonder what they're doing. I wonder what they're not doing. I was blaming. And when I started to realize that that's what I was doing, I first felt a great deal of shame, if I'm honest. And shame has a way of tending to kind of shut us down. And so I did. I actually just kind of shut down on the whole thing. And didn't explore it any further. But then, you know, the articles kept coming out and the thought kept rolling around in my mind and I couldn't quite shake it. And so I did my best, and I'm not sure how good that is, but I did my best to look in and to lean in. To say, God, is there anything about this reality that I need to be thinking about? What do I need to learn? What about me needs to change? How might I need to respond? And, you know, a couple of things became pretty clear for me pretty quickly. One was that in this whole conversation around racial inequity, I had kind of checked out. If you've been at the branch for a few years, you know that this has been a major area that God has been working on in my life. But I've checked out lately, I think. Really, probably without even being aware of it necessarily. But I have. And that carried with it, for me, a conviction. I feel like where I am in life, this is something that I cannot ignore. So that was one reality as I started to look inward, and that required me to lean in as well and to say, God, I need help with this. Because the other thing that I realized is that the reason I checked out is because I have the privilege of doing so. You know, as a white person, I don't have to think about racial inequity if I don't want to. And so I tried to lean into God around that one too and say, what's going on there? Can I face the privilege that I have? Can I be honest about what it means to be white in this world, the superiority that I come out of, the way of thinking about being white? And can I keep working at that? And again, just to be right, this is a really honest example of me saying, you look how much easier it is to blame. To put the responsibility over there, as someone said in our chat, on those people. Instead of being willing to look inward and to be compassionately curious and wonder,
is there something here for me to learn or to do or to become? So you see how easily blame shows up? That's true in our lives just always. It feels to me perhaps especially true though in this liminal space. And so I'm going to just kind of close this time by asking you a couple of questions, or inviting you to ask these questions of yourself. Am I defaulting to blame anywhere in my life? Pandemic related, not pandemic related, anywhere in my life, am I defaulting to blame? And what would it look like if I am? What would it look like for me to look and lean in instead? What would that look like? And my two examples are just my examples. They may not look like your examples. And the things that I'm realizing about where I am might not be at all what you need to realize about where you are, what God wants to reveal to you, make you, help you see. But am I defaulting to blame? And what would it look like for me to look and lean in instead? I want to invite you to kind of hold those questions this week. Because if we do that, I think then that this liminal space actually holds, despite all of the disruption and the challenge, the pain, the difficulty, the isolation, despite all of that, I still think that this liminal space holds opportunity for us to become more of who God invites us to be. So, with that, let's turn to something that reminds us of who we are invited to be. We're going to share communion here. And if you weren't at the very beginning of the morning and you missed that reminder announcement that we're doing this today, now is your chance to scamper and find something, a cracker, a piece of pita bread, a bagel, whatever. Find something that might work. And, you know, for the juice part, juice, wine, who